Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and the Inside Analog Photo radio program is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. They got some beautiful pack film. They're going to be importing the Instax instant format into the country here coming up soon. Just a lot of great stuff going on with Fuji. Great chrome, great neg, a lot of cool stuff. Check them out, www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends over at Richard Photo Lab. Over at richardphotolab.com, great lab to send all of your stuff, black and white, chrome, neg. These guys do excellent work, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com for a very cool camera strap. And our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group, the place on the web to find out about all things film. Wet process, chrome, black and white, negative, development, photochemistry, alternate processes, everything going on with traditional photography process. The place to go, APUG.org. Really great stuff going on with those guys. Definitely check them out. You'll learn a ton of information. A great place. A lot of people there to help you. Just an unbelievable resource on the net. We have a great guest today. We have Jonathan Canlis. Jonathan is a film shooter from Utah. He develops his own stock in-house. Got his own Fuji scanner, Noritsu developer. Cool stuff going on with Jonathan. He's been published all over the country. He does beautiful weddings and he shoots all film. He's been, of course, in PDN. The Knot magazine, great things going on with Jonathan, and he has a very cool workshop coming up here called Film Is Not Dead, geared towards the wedding and portrait photographer on how to shoot film and just how to make great photography. Hey, Jonathan, how you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. You know, we want to talk to you, Jonathan, because you're a wedding and portrait photographer. You do a lot of great work. You've been published in PDN, a bunch of great places, The Knot. Consequently, you shoot film. You're a film shooter, and this is why we want to talk to you today. Tell us about Jonathan. Give me a little background on yourself and how you sort of got into photography and now actually shooting all this film stuff, because you know now a lot of people shoot digital. Jonathan's a film guy. Let's talk about this.
Well, I was born and raised in St. Louis. I've lived in Hawaii also as well. I currently live in Lehi, Utah, which is about 20 minutes south of Salt Lake. Moved out here for school, met my wife, and we're pretty much here for good. I went to Brigham Young University, which is located about 20 miles south of where I live right now. I received a BFA in photography from them, along with two other degrees, a degree in Japanese and a degree in Asian studies. I don't use them, but I have them. A nice plaque on my wall. I'm a 100% film shooter. I specialize in weddings. I shoot portraits. I shoot a little bit of commercial work here and there for a couple companies in Park City. I shoot all film.
Yeah, this is really cool. You're shooting all film. So, Jonathan, give us a little background on why you prefer to use film over digital. Let's talk about this because, you know, a lot of people abandon film. They got this digital stuff, and we'll talk about here later why it's not so fun shooting all this digital, but why does Jonathan like film?
There are several reasons why I shoot film. The main reason for me is the look. Just hands down, the look of film, when properly exposed on the right film, on the right camera, straight out of camera, to me, it's uncomparable to what I was able to get with digital, if that makes sense. Another main reason is that my post-processing, all of that stuff, is all done pretty much in-camera in the exposure. I'm not dealing with hours and hours in front of a computer having to edit images. I shoot everything analog, but post-production is digital in the fact that everything gets scanned on my own Fuji Frontier. I have an SP2500, just the scanning module. I don't have the printing part of it, but it does not have digital ice, so there is a little bit of touch-up. That's just done by assistants and employees that will clean up the images. But once it gets scanned, it's done. It's ready. It's good to go.
This is really cool that you have your own mini lab stuff in your scanner. We'll talk about what you're doing with that here in a bit. What do you find when you're shooting film? Of course, you have the unique look of film, and we'll get into the different emulsions and what you're shooting here in a bit. What do you see as your clients? Because I think most of your business is all wedding and some portrait, correct?
Correct.
So do you find that people are hunting you out? Are they looking for Jonathan because you're shooting film, because your look, or your clients don't care?
I don't know if they're doing it specifically. I know I've had a couple clients hire me specifically because I was shooting film, but I think I get hired because they'll come to me and say, you know, your stuff just looks different. And then when I do explain it to them that it's 100% film, I think that's when they realize that this is why it does look different, because there are a lot of people in the industry that are completely 100% digital and they don't shoot film whatsoever. So I think that does give me kind of an edge because the look is completely different. It's totally different from digital images, I think. I think there are a lot of digital images that strive to look like film and they're striving to look like what I'm already shooting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about your gear. What is Jonathan shooting with?
It's a lot of cameras. For family, formals, engagements, and like pictures of bride and groom, things like that. And I'm using a Contax 645. It's a fantastic camera. I've got an 80 f2 lens, a 142.8, and a 45 2.8. One back, but I just use the insert. I'll just swap them in and out. For fast action things, I'm using Nikon f5. Shoot all prime lenses on that as well. I've got a 51.4, a Zeiss 51.4, 85 1.8, then a Zeiss 85 1.4, then a 20mm 1.8. It's a Sigma lens. I also shoot a handful of work on a Holga camera, also on a Yashica Matte 124G.
So most of your setup in your wedding, you're going to be shooting the contacts for all your former portraits and most of the stuff. When do you actually go into, or when you're going to be shooting the Nikon gear at a wedding reception? Is this just mainly reception stuff where you need to run around like crazy?
Yeah, reception, getting ready, lots of the details, lots of individual headshots, stuff like that. It's just a faster camera. The contact is a wonderful piece of equipment. The glass on it is just phenomenal. I shoot Zeiss lenses on my Nikon so I can make my Nikon look like my contacts. You know what I mean? Because I'm shooting with the Zeiss glass. It's just out of this world. But focusing-wise and capturing things as they go, they're happening, I need to have my Nikons. I'm still shooting everything in manual. Manual focus, manual settings. I don't use autofocus. I just never got around to doing autofocus. It's all manual, even though I say it's faster to focus. It is still faster to focus because it's a medium format lens versus a 35mm lens. The Nikons just seem to be a lot easier with that format. And then also with family formals and portraits of the bride and groom, a lot of it is staged, so I direct them as to how I want them to look, how I want them to pose. It's slowed down a little bit, and I can take my time, focus, and get what I need to in a more controlled environment.
Metering, because you're shooting film, you need to grab the stuff and make sure that it's spot on. You're not shooting raw where you can actually go back later and fix poor photography. I think a lot of the problems that you see today with photographers is they've never shot film, they don't know how to meter, they don't know how to do correct photography, and they can be plus or minus whatever because they're shooting raw, and you can go back through and fix this stuff later. When you're shooting film, you need to know what you're doing. What does Jonathan use when it comes to metering?
I use the Konic L508. It's around my neck at all times. I'm constantly rebuying neck straps because after a good wedding season, it just starts to smell. So I use this Konic L508. I'm overexposing my film by anywhere from at least half a stop up to 3 stops, sometimes even 4 stops, depending on what the situation is. Again, that's with the C41 films. Black and white's a little different with the metering. With the black and white film, there's pretty much 2 films that I shoot that are true black and white. It is the Neopan 1600 made by Fuji, mm-hmm. and I also shoot a handful of the Kodak TMZ, the 3200.
Wow.
I either rate it at 1600, or I like to push the 3200 all the way up to 6400.
Now, are you having the guys, when they develop your black and white for you, because I know you're sending the black and white out, are you having them use a specific developer because you're pushing this to 3200? A lot of people can push that stuff even farther. So what do you like to use developer-wise in the black and white so it doesn't look super, super grain, even though the grain has its organic and it has its look because it's appropriate?
I like the grain. Like, if I'm going to shoot the 3200, the whole reason is it's going to be grainy. I usually mostly use that at night at receptions to give it that, like, warm, welcoming feeling of a reception, that it was really cozy, it was, like, really intimate, candlelit-looking kind of images. I welcome the grain. I like the look of the 3200 pushed to 64. Again, I send out my black and white. They're the ones developing, and I'm not the one hand-developing my true black and white as of yet. That will change probably here in the next couple months, but as of right now, it's being sent out.
Yeah, we can't run it through the Ritza, but you can pick up Jobo nice and economical off of eBay.
Exactly,
and start cranking out some cool black and white. And then you can play with your different developers and what chemical you want to use and effectively tone that grain exactly where you want it. So that's really cool. So, Jonathan, we know what you like to shoot for black and white. Tell me what you're shooting for color. What do you like shooting for C41? What kind of emulsions? What do you like? What gives you that unique look and that saturation and the color that you're using right now?
To get the looks that I'm shooting, I'm using the Fuji 400H, the Fuji 800Z for all of my C41. I like to stick with the 400 just because I'm using so many camera bodies during the day. I don't want to grab the wrong body and then expose it incorrectly. So I pretty much try and stick with 400 straight across the board, unless I'm in a controlled, slow-down environment, and I'll start shooting the 800, where I just basically switch completely over to shooting 800 ISO so that it's changed on my light meter that's around my neck. I shoot a lot of cross-process stuff in the Holga. For that, strictly, it's Kodak E100VS cross-process. Those are the 3 main films that I'm shooting. It's a Kodak E100VS for cross-process, and then straight color would be the Fuji 400H and then the 800Z.
Okay, so let's talk about the 400H as being your main emulsion that you're using. And like you said, you like to push some of this up to four stops overexposed. In what situation do you find that you want to shoot this okay? Well, at two stops, three stops, four stops, a half stop. How does Jonathan figure, okay, well, where do I want to shoot this at? Do you do this because, okay, I want this to be a certain, this photo here, or this group of photos, I want to have a certain look because I know if I push this three stop, I'm going to have this very nice soft pastel look. How do you figure what you want to do when you're actually shooting the 400H?
A lot of it depends on the lighting situation. I expose completely different when I'm shooting in broad daylight as opposed to if I'm shooting in the shade, as opposed to if I'm shooting backlit. It all depends on the lighting situation. But again, the overexposing, the reason for the overexposing is, for me, that's my post-processing. That's where I'm introducing the saturation and the contrast. Because the more you overexpose on color neg film, the more you're introducing saturation and contrast. So it totally depends on the situation, what I'm doing for it. Like if it's a family formal, if it's in the shade, if it's in broad daylight, it totally depends.
That's definitely ideal where you need to go out and people need to shoot and try different things and test stuff to get their look down, what they want for their exposure. Because like you said, depending on what you're looking for, how much saturation, contrast, how thick and thin the neg gets, you need to go out and do this yourself to sort of see, okay, well, yeah, I didn't know I could go four stops. Or, wow, look at that. That's crazy looking at four. This looks great at two, blah, blah, blah.
The other thing is, going back to what you were saying about what emulsions I like to shoot with, the reason I like to stick with 400 straight across the board is that literally, if anyone started to do this, start shooting with just one straight ISO, you start to learn specifically the lighting in every situation. I wear light meter around my neck just as, I guess, peace of mind. Do I really need it? No. I could show up to the place and be like, okay, I know the exposure is going to be this at this to get my look. Like, I know backlit, no matter what, if I've got a subject and they're backlit, it's 500th of a second f5.6 on 400 ISO, no matter what, hands down. And so I can grow my conversions from there, like if I want to shoot a 2.8, f2, whatever. It really helps getting to know your equipment and not even have to worry about, oh, did I get the shot? No, I know flat out I got it because I've been shooting at this ISO for so long at so many shoots that it just comes second nature.
That's definitely true. And the problem I see today is with people is there's a lot of people coming back to shooting film or coming to shoot film that have never shot film that have been shooting digital that has relied on metering in their camera and being able to shoot raw with the much latitude you have to fixing your problems in raw image processor. That people don't understand what you're doing or how they get that look. And I think this is one thing we want to talk about is your really cool workshop that's coming up here. We're going to get to that here in a bit. But I don't think people understand on how to look at a scene and look at lighting and really know how to meter it. It's a big problem.
The one thing I love about film, when it's coupled with the scanning with that I do on the Fuji Frontier SP2500, next to none. I mean, rare. It is very rare that I ever, ever have a problem with blown highlights. Just cannot blow them on that, like, on film. It just cannot be blown out. The detail is always there. And when it's scanned on the Frontier, on a setting that's called All Hard, the retention detail in the highlights is just phenomenal. I can get details in a cloud. I can get details in a white dress, all the way down to the details in a black suit. I love film for that reason, is that you just can't lose the detail.
Now, with the 400H that you're shooting and the way you're doing it, what do you figure you're getting latitude-wise? You getting 10 stops out of this film? Because it sounds like you'd be able to, with the way you're scanning it, with the SP2500, that you're pulling probably 10 stops or more.
I would say probably close to that, 9 or 10 stops, something like that.
Yeah, see, people would not typically understand, well, you couldn't get 9 or 10 stops out of color neg. Well,
yeah.
You can.
You can. I used to take my stuff to a lab locally here in Aritu, and they were good scans, but again, it was at the cost of the details and the highlights. The Aritu is a great scanner for a lab because it's made for a lab. It's made for them to be quick. It's got the digital ice. They can bulk scan 220 and 35 really quickly. It's good for them because it's efficient. Now, is it good for a photographer? From my experience, I would say no because, again, the details that I was getting in the highlights would be gone. The details would be gone in the shadows, where if it was scanned on the Frontier, it was there, night and day.
Now, before you got your Frontier scanner, before you got the Fuji SP2500, did you ever scan any of your stuff with a smaller scanner that may be an entry-level photographer that's not going to go out and spend the kind of dough on a commercial piece of heavy-duty equipment? Did you ever do anything with Epson scanners, Nikon stuff, anything where you had done and played around with your own hybrid workflow?
No, I have an Epson scanner, 4990. As far as me scanning it, no. one of the main things I liked about film was that, you know, I could shoot it, drop it off to my lab, and a couple of days I've got everything back. I've never been really interested in scanning my own work. I say I have my own SP2500. I'm not doing the scanning. I have assistants, I have employees that I've trained to get my look, and they scan it for me.
Of course, you do have your own Noritsu developer, and you have your own Fuji SP2500 scan system. What brought you to the point of getting your own developer and your own scanning gear so you could do this in-house? A lot of places, labs are great, they do a lot of great work, but did it come to the point that it's, okay, well, Jonathan wants to control his own look and his scan, or was it just more of an economic deal? It's like, I'm going through so much film, I got to do this myself.
It was definitely both. The main one was quality control. It seemed that my lab that I would be using, they'd have a good stretch there for a while where everything was just spot on, and then they'd switch through employees because semesters changed or something, and then all of a sudden I'm just getting unacceptable scans, color that's just off the charts, doesn't make any sense. Again, I bought my SP2500 from a guy named Brian Watley. He used to run a lab here in Provo called Campus Photo, which was just south of Brigham Young University. He's really knowledgeable in the business. He actually helps us with the Noritsu. He helps us do the plotting so we make sure our chemistry is straight on. And again, like you said, economically, yes, I am saving a lot of money. My lab would be charging me $8 a roll to develop. We develop about twice a week. We're saving at least $3,000 to $4,000 a month in developing.
Well, that adds up, and if you buy the film bulk or get it wholesale, you can actually economically shoot film, and actually ends up being cheaper than shooting digital, because I think one thing that people don't realize is Jonathan, you go out and shoot your stuff, you drop it off at the lab, or you guys do it yourself, so you have an employee that develops it. It's not that hard to actually put the stuff in the machine, let it develop, and go through the scanner, but guess what? You don't have 3,000 hours in Photoshop.
Exactly. On an average wedding, with images from anywhere from low-end 500 up to about 1,200 images, tops, it'll take me about 3 hours tops to edit a wedding, and that's just basically going through keep, delete, and then batch editing to resize for web, and then uploading online, and then releasing the event, and archiving it as well.
Really? So you're finding that the scan out of the SP2500 Frontier scanner, that you don't have to go into Photoshop and run all the levels and change this and fix this and touch this and do that. Basically, it's like you're just going into the computer to run your normal resizing, your JPEGing, and your archiving as more of just a digital backup and something that you can send off to the printer, then going through and editing each individual photo and just tweaking on every one.
Exactly.
Wow, that's great. Because people don't realize, you know, it is really. People just don't realize on how much time it takes to shoot and edit a wedding in digital. Yes, you can get some great stuff. The digital technology, great. Fuji has an S5 with a cool sensor can. It's got some beautiful stuff. The new Nikon stuff's great. But you don't realize on how much work you have post to make the stuff the way you want it to.
When I create an album for the client, there's a little bit more doctoring that goes into it. But again, it's not anything extensive. Actions is kind of like a four-letter word in my world. So I don't want textures. But I do very straightforward photography. There's nothing enhanced or fake about it. It's very just straightforward, real photography. Again, I don't run action. I'll correct for density and a little bit of contrast, maybe here and there. But again, editing a wedding will tops take me 3 hours.
That's amazing because, you know, like you said, the action thing is like a four-letter word, and I'm not getting down on anybody that makes actions or makes this kind of product. But a lot of people that shoot wedding and portrait, especially wedding, they'll go out and shoot 4,000 or 5,000 images at a wedding. Might as well just turn the thing on full burst. And then they run the stuff as a batch, and it's like, okay, we'll run action A, B, F, D, and G on it, and this is what I have when I'm done. And you can tell the stuff stepped on like there's no tomorrow, and it's just, I don't get it. But that works for some people, but it's not real photography.
It only does work for some people. There's nothing wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with actions. I'm not saying that there's something wrong with actions. It's just that there's a place for it, and there's just not a place for it in my work. In my body of work, I just don't. It's very straightforward. I want to create images that will not be able to have a date stamped on them. And I don't want someone to look at a wedding that I shot last week and in 5 years be like, oh, wow, that's really 2008. I want it to be just straightforward, true, honest photography that will hopefully stand the test of time.
Definitely so. I mean, like you said, it's true photography. It's cool. So, Jonathan, let's talk about your work that's been published. You've had multiple images in this year's PDN Top Knots. You've been published all over the place. Let's talk about you being published and how this actually has helped you in your business when it comes to getting new work with new brides and how all this publishing stuff has actually helped you out.
It's been pretty amazing. I have 6 more weddings the rest of this year, which only one of them is actually in this state. I'm shooting a wedding in Chicago, San Francisco, Oakland, San Diego, and then another town outside of Oakland as well. And most of these weddings are coming from brides that have seen me in publications, either online or in print, that normally, if I hadn't been in that publication or hadn't been published, there's no way I could have ever marketed to that bride. There's no way that my marketing could reach to her from Lehi, Utah. I mean, the town that I live in is pretty small. It's not a metropolis of any sort. It's helped a lot in actually getting bookings that are out of state, bookings that are travel, bookings that are international destination wedding. It's been probably, I'd say, besides my blog, the best way of marketing my work is getting published in publications like The Knot or in PDN or something like that.
Now, let's talk about how you'd get published and how someone would actually get to the place where you've been, because do you submit every wedding to these different magazine publications so people can check out your work? How did Jonathan sort of get into this role moving forward? Like, okay, I'm going to get my stuff in the book, man. We're going to get the stuff in the magazine. We're going to get printed.
Well, actually, you know, I've been really lucky. I've never really had to submit. When The Knot went live in Utah a couple years back, Rebecca Kremley, who is the photo editor over there, I'd signed up to advertise on their site, and she had contacted me to submit a couple weddings online. And from that relationship and from that first submission, she has followed my online proofing site where all of my events are put online, and she has just contacted me to request weddings. Or I think nowadays a lot of it has moved from being like magazines like that to like kind of hipper web wedding blogs where they feature the likes of anybody. They're following all the kind of the big photographers, and then they'll feature the wedding on the blog. And these blogs are getting anywhere from low-end 10,000 to about 50,000 hits a day of potential brides. So I never really have tried to submit. When they ask for weddings, I'll submit things, but I've never really aggressively gone out and said, hey, will you publish this? I've always been lucky enough where they just approached me.
That's great. It has to do with the fine quality of your work and the unique look that you have. And let's hope that part of it is because it's real, true photography.
I would like to hope so as well. But again, you know, I mean, it all kind of stemmed from her first contact with me. She emailed me randomly and was like, we would like to feature this wedding on our online site because they are just opening up in Utah. I believe this was maybe in 2005. From that wedding went on to get published in their national publication. I've had a couple in regional Knot magazines in Washington, Potomac area, Southern California, Northern California, Vegas. It's just been really good.
Great. This stuff shot on film. It's real photography. And like you said, there's a place for digital and it's all good. Really, I think it's just so cool that you're doing this type of work and doing this actually all yourself on your own machine, scanning your own stuff. And this is just too cool.
It's different. It's definitely not the norm, I'll tell you that. And again, it's not for everybody. Film is definitely, you have to know the ins and outs. It's funny, when I'm at a wedding, every single time someone asks me, why are you shooting film? How do you know that you got it? And how do I know that I got it? I know every single time that when I go home from the wedding, I got what I needed. The exposures were dead on because I'm constantly shooting with the same ISO. I'm constantly shooting the same lighting situations. There are new things that present themselves at every wedding. So I know my equipment in and out. I don't need to chimp. It'd be nice to see a couple things here and there, especially if we're doing off-camera lighting and things like that. It all comes through the experience and knowing your equipment.
That's the big deal. But how long did it take you to where you were confident saying, okay, I don't need to chimp. I know what I'm doing. I know I nailed the shot. I'm not worried about it. Did it take what you learned in school to pound this in your head to say, you know something, I got this handled. I don't need to worry about it. I have the confidence to do this. Did it go out and have to stuff a few weddings in the wall to say, well, I figured this out now?
No, I never stuck a couple weddings in the wall. I never shot not knowing what I was doing. I started the BFA photography at Brigham Young University pretty late in my college career. I'd already finished a little under 4 years of college. I did 7.5 years of undergrad. So I'd already been shooting on my own. Nothing professional, nothing that was to what I'm doing today. But by that time, I'd already learned my exposures. I knew how to deal with film. And I'd been kind of dabbling in digital here and there. But I knew it before I left school. Before I even started shooting professionally, I knew what I was doing. And from someone on the outside looking in that's never really shot film, it seems really daunting. It seems like just crazy. How can you do that? My biggest advice to them is that it's not. It's not hard. It's not as crazy as you may think. It's actually easier than you could have ever imagined. Because just like you said, I shoot it, I drop it off, get it developed, get the scans back, and I'm done. If more people knew this secret, they'd be jumping off ship and shooting film faster than you could say. I love C41 because of the latitude of it. It is a lovely, forgiving film. Always err on the side of overexposing. If you underexpose your film, it's done. There's not much you can do. It's going to look like crap. It's going to look really grainy. The colors are going to be shifting, and it's just not pleasant. So for someone that's just starting out, the best advice, err on the side of overexposing, and you'll be surprised.
Definitely so. This is beautiful stuff. And these pictures here, and people go over to the website over at thepdngallery.com/contest/topknots/2008 and just go find this stuff. I mean, there's a bunch of your photographs up here on this one with the pink cake with the backdrop and the table. It's just so cool. There's a lot of great photos in here they published of your stuff. It's great.
Thank you.
Cool stuff. Let's talk about, you got a benefit coming up here. Let's talk about that. And then I want to get into your workshop after that.
I actually just finished the benefit. It was for the month of September. I did a charity benefit for a family in Arizona, Stephanie and Christian Nielsen. They were involved in a plane crash. They have four little kids ranging from, I believe, 1 through 6. They were in this crash and basically suffered burns on 85% of their body. They're in a hospital. They've got a long road to recovery. I basically found out about this from reading other people's blogs, past clients and stuff like that. And it's crazy how much the blog world has come together and helped them. Basically, what I did for the month of September was any family shoots, the sitting fee would go straight to what's called the NeNe Recovery. Stephanie, the woman who was in the crash, had a blog called the NeNe Dialogues, and so the recovery was called NeNe. The sitting fees would go to that, and then all print reprints from the events would go to the family as well.
Wow, that's great. It looks like you had a pretty big turnout, too, for this.
Besides my regular 5 weddings, a couple commercial shoots, and other stuff that I had going on for the month, I shot 19 families in 19 days in 3 states. The busiest being, I believe it was September 22nd, where I flew out with my assistant, Leo Patron, to Oakland, California. We got on a plane at about 6:20, got off the plane, drove to San Francisco to the DeYoung Museum, shot 5 families in 6.5 hours, got back on a plane that exact same night.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. The coolest thing was to see so many people come together and for such a great cause. This is all charity. Everyone knew that whatever money that they spend on these family portraits would go straight to this family. I may have shot 19 families. I had to turn away a couple others last minute canceled, so I couldn't rebook anyone. But, I mean, within 5 days of announcing it, I was booked. It was done. It was over. I couldn't accept anymore. So it was really cool.
Great to be able to do this and actually help people. And I think, too, besides doing a great gesture to help this family out that got all burned, that it's going to actually help. And I think the good karma is going to come around for Jonathan even more so because, you know, you've given back to the community and you're helping people out with your photography. I think this is really cool.
You know, it was all about the message that her NeNe Dialogues, her blog was about. She's a mom. Her blog was about her family life, her being a mom and her family and stuff like that. And that's why I chose to do, I mean, I could have given away a wedding, I could have given away something, but I chose to do family portraits because that's what it was about. It's about the importance of families and getting these people together and just paying it forward.
This is great. Jonathan, let's talk about something very cool coming up here that's completely sold out. I'm sure you're going to have more coming up in the future, but let's talk about Film Is Not Dead Workshop in Hawaii. This is really cool.
I'm conducting a workshop November 3rd through the 6th in Hawaii on the north shore of Oahu in a town called Laie. Now, when you think of Oahu, a lot of people probably think of like Waikiki, downtown Honolulu, and now this is completely something totally opposite. It's on the other side of the island. It's very more laid back. It's very country. I conduct a workshop there at a beach house right there on the ocean. It's basically a workshop about wedding and portrait photography in film. We talk about film. We talk about basically everything I've talked with you today, why I use film, why I shoot film, what cameras I'm shooting on. And then we go a little bit more into depth about covering a wedding and covering families. I talk about a lot of people at weddings are not into doing family formals. It's kind of like the dread, the thorn in the side. And I talk about how you can actually love doing family formals, how it can be quick, efficient, more importantly, a moneymaker for yourself. And then I talk about storytelling through details. I talk about getting published. I have no secrets. I'm an open book. For 4 days, we have a handful of on-hand shoots at a handful of amazing locations, great models. Most importantly, my wife, who is, I will say, a gourmet cook, caters the whole thing for the 4 days.
Wow, so you got good food, too.
Yes, we do. If you go back and read some of the testimonials from the first workshop that I did in March, say half of them talked about the food.
Well, Well, that's a big thing. You know, you got to make sure you have good food. It makes the whole day great, you know. Do you find that most people that take the Film Is Not Dead workshop, people are new photographers, or they been shooting digital and they're like, well, you know, I really want to investigate this film deal? Or is it more so they're coming to learn from Jonathan about your style and how you're shooting stuff? Because I know you cover, besides the whole film aspect of it, you cover posing, lighting, the whole thing. It's an all-encompassing workshop with Jonathan. So what do you think your main client that's coming to the workshop is looking for?
I think it's a mixture of everything you just said. Got a handful of people that are very familiar with my work that live here in Utah that want to come and learn. We've got a handful of people that are digital that want to kind of open their horizons and give them another something they can put in their bag, give them more options so that they can learn film. I've got people that are already established that have nothing to do with weddings that just love the idea of doing something like this. You know, film is not dead. To most people, it is dead. It is a dead medium, and crazy that I'm doing something like this. But through the workshop, I hope to prove to people that, especially through my images, that film is indeed not dead, that it's a live medium and that it's something that can not only enhance you as a digital shooter, but kind of maybe open your horizons to new and different things. So
can definitely enhance you as a digital shooter. If you start shooting film and you start spending some time and slowing down and learning how to compose and how to meter and how to look at light, you can make yourself a much better shooter all the way around. Digital film, it doesn't matter what it is, but film will make you slow down and think about what you're doing.
Digital photography is based on the basics, film photography. That's how it was created. And I think that it would only enhance you as a photographer to be able to get to the point where you don't have to chimp, even if you're shooting digitally, to show up with a light meter and not have to worry about shooting it in camera or, you know, going off the camera meter, or being able to nail down the knowledge that you need to just show up and be able to create and not have to worry about, oh, you know, did I get the shot? Did I expose it correctly? You know, did I blow the highlights? Film will help you do that.
It's a great thing that you guys are doing with the Film Is Not Dead workshop. You got a couple sponsors on this too, yeah?
Yeah, Fujifilm has come on, and they're providing film for the attendees. Fineo has also come on. They're the ones that provide the book, the workbook that it's printed in. And Lens Rentals, they provide rentals for lenses, cameras, bodies, lighting equipment, you name it. They're fantastic.
Great to be able to use a good rental place, and Lens Rentals is cool. To be able to grab a piece of glass, let's say you're shooting Canon, you want an 85-1.2, you want an 85-1.4 for your Nikon F5, F6, F3, whatever. I mean, it's cool to be able to go to a place and be able to rent a lens for a week or 3 or 4 days to shoot a gig with and test it out before you go buy the stuff. That's why people don't really realize, hey,
you
know, yeah, go try this thing out. You know, see how cool this brand new 200 F2 is before I go spend $6,000 on it.
They're actually who I used before I bought my Zeiss lenses. Now, I'd heard all this about the Nikon Zeiss lenses. I rented a couple from them and should have just said, can I just drop them and pay you for them? Because I'm going to buy them right now. So they're good. It's great. It's a great place. It's a great way to find out before plopping it down and being buyer's remorse. So, you know, I didn't really need that. I think renting is the best way to test out something before you actually make the full commitment of the purchase.
People do get remorse. And I'm sure, as you well know, probably with yourself as far, definitely with me too, is you start buying stuff and you figure out later, it's like, well, I shouldn't have bought that.
Exactly.
I should have done this. And I think it's great to be able to go to these type of gigs and actually have the things available to you to say, yeah, I want to do this. You know, a lot of people, let's say, might start shooting film and they might start shooting chroma. They might get discouraged because they can't know the exposure perfectly every time. Or they try to go shoot it in low light and not know how to do it or how to meter for this or how to have the stuff pushed or pulled. And then they get discouraged from it. And I think going to a workshop and learning like what you're teaching people about film and what you can read online and the stuff that you're sharing with people. A long time ago, photographers wouldn't share the information that you're sharing with them. This was locked up tight.
That's one of the first things I talk about, like within the first 15 minutes. I flat out tell them I'm an open book and that there are no secrets to what I'm doing. I don't have industry secrets. There isn't any magical formula that I'm using to get to where I've gotten. It's all blood, sweat, and tears to the hard work that I've done, but I'm an open book. I'm willing to share the information that I have with the attendees, and in sharing it, it's going to help them. It will help the industry. It will get new photographers out there, hopefully shooting film. So,
yeah, this is great stuff you're doing, Jonathan. Why don't you give everybody the links to how do we find out about the workshops, your website. You got a great blog going. Tell us about Jonathan, where we can find all the information, and check out all the great work you're doing.
Well, you can find me online at www.jonathancanlessphotography.com. That's my main website. I also have a blog, which is canlessphotography.blogspot.com. The Film Is Not Dead workshop can be found online as well. It's just jonathancanlisphotography.com/workshop. And then the blog for the workshop as well is filmisnotdead.blogspot.com.
Really cool stuff you're up to, and I really appreciate you joining us today. Great to see you're shooting film. Very cool to see this workshop that you're doing, Film Is Not Dead, and just beautiful photography you're doing. It's really great stuff, Jonathan. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, there you go, Jonathan Canlis. Great stuff going on with Jonathan. How cool is that to have your own Noritsu developing machine and a Fuji SP2500 scanner in your own shop, and you can just do it in-house yourself? Pretty neat stuff going on there. And, of course, the Film Is Not Dead workshop is really cool. Check it all out over at Jonathan's website. You can go to our links, www.insideanalogphoto.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors, of course, Fujifilm over at FujifilmUSA.com, Richard Photo Lab at RichardPhotoLab.com, Upstrap at Upstrap-Pro.com, and of course, our media partners, the place, the best place on the web to find out about analog photography, over at www.apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group. Great stuff going on there. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.